Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is Kendall speaking. I've got with me my cat in the background, Sajit and Evan. It's episode 401 on Thursday, November 4th, the last day of Ignite. And so today, that's what we're going to cover, all of the goodness that came out of Ignite, lots of updates here. So we're at least going to try our best in the next few minutes to just talk about some of the updates and new features and services that we're excited about. So I'll open up the floor and we'll just kick it off. Sajit, Evan, do either of y'all want to kind of talk through how we want to do the structure, or how are we going to do this? Rapid fire? What is it?
We're just going to get overwhelmed with the really long list. Yeah, I mean, Sajid, you want to hit some of your favorites first? Then I definitely have a couple that
I think I think it's clear each one of us has our favorites, right? So we'll try to cover those. what Kendall's going to cover, but so let's talk about some of them. The stuff that I'm really passionate about. So Telegraph is a really interesting plugin. I don't know if you system, I should say, not a plugin, but it's like a instrumentation or telemetry gathering system, right? You could it's very flexible, and you can configure a wide variety of input and output plugins into Telegraph. And then Telegraph does all the transformations and the mappings between inputs and outputs. It's very, very convenient. It's what powers Azure Monitor under the covers, right? That's the lowest level that you get. And what they have, customers use Telegraph on premises. They use it along with their Kubernetes. They use it for IoT installations to collect logs and telemetry and IoT data. And now we've created an output plugin that lets you take that data and directly send it to Azure Data Explorer. You can imagine now, you're collecting all this data and you want to look at it somewhere or analyze it somewhere, you just send it directly to Azure Data Explorer, then you can go back later and take a look at it. I think this is certainly something that I'd want to look at in the next few days.
So is Telegraph, Sajit, is Telegraph, some sort of open source project that ended up underpinning Monitor? So this is something that people, like, there's no connection to Monitor other than it does run Monitor. Like, it's not a service that we're necessarily providing.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it is an open source project that has literally hundreds, if not thousands, of plugins that are available for it. Okay. It's all written in Golang. It's very portable, very fast. I wrote a couple of Azure IoT plugins for it myself, which I had pushed to the repo a few months ago. So I think it's used very extensively. It's just think of it as a generic middleware that can be used between any input and output protocol, right? Let's put it that way. You can read from one protocol right to a disk. You can read from disk right to another protocol. You can do any kind of combination like that using just Telegraph as your middleware. And so people are already, using it for a wide variety of ingestion. They might as well just send the data to Azure Data Explorer as one of the outputs. So it's just a matter of configuring that plugin, some configuration there, and you're good to go.
Okay.
I see that it actually monitors containerized environments and servers. I didn't know anything about, I to be fair, I didn't know what Telegraph was. I have not heard of this before. Maybe I should know about that. But interesting, so it's like a data collection agent. I wonder how that's going to, like, do you know kind of the way that's going to fit into the current ecosystem with, like, Azure Monitor already existing, like, and some of the features and tools we have there? Is it just kind of supplemental, or I don't know. I have questions, but.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that this is to help the many people that use Telegraph today, right, but have to do something special to send it to Azure, right? It may not be convenient out of the box. And now by sending it to Azure Data Explorer, you get all your data in one place. That's what you want. You want to see your data, because the data that it's ingesting is coming from a wide variety of places, right? And so you want to be able to look at that in some place, in some central place. And now you'll be able to look at that in Azure Data Explorer.
Yeah, makes sense.
Evan, you want to go next?
Cool. Yeah, let me hit on a couple of these. One of them is the Azure Virtual Network Manager. So this is now in preview, and I've already got a conversation going. We'll get the team on here, but functionally what this allows you to do is configure and manage multiple virtual networks, basically your entire software-defined network through one interface, right? Because that's really the problem. Hey, I want to apply an NSG, you know, to VNet A. Well, oh crap, I need it on VNet B and C and D. And how do I make sure it, you know, that I'm following my standards when you've got all those? So that, I think that's a great one. The other one, if anybody has ever used an NVA, so a network virtual appliance, you know, F5, Cisco, the like, one of the hardest things about that is making sure that you've got your user-defined routes configured so that traffic gets routed to the NVA and, you know, on its way in or out of your network. Well, now we have this Azure Gateway Load Balancer feature that you can configure this, set this up, you drop this on your virtual network, and it handles that for you. It basically ends up, in essence, inserting that in line into the traffic without you having to explicitly configure the routes. So this makes it much, much, much easier to add those kind of appliances, you know, into your, again, sort of playing into that theme of how do we make it easier to manage this stuff, right? One network is easy, 1,000 virtual networks is almost impossible to manage by hand.
And I do like the fact that it spans globally across all subscriptions. So, you know, you're an administrator, you know, I know one of my customers has over 200 subscriptions and probably, you know, 2,000 virtual networks. And so being able to look at the whole estate of networks to make sure everything's in good shape, I think is very powerful here.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, because if you go back, you know, sort of if you look at the progression, you know, for a long time, first it was, hey, we have this concept of virtual networks and VMs can talk to each other. And then there's been, many, many years of adding features. And, you know, that work is still happening, but what you're seeing now is you're sort of seeing that next step, that management step, that configuration step, so that now I have all these resources and I want to be able to manage them in an efficient way. And so I think that's sort of the evolution that you're seeing, within the networking space is all that kicking in recently over the last couple of years.
Well, I have a few here. Well, there's a lot of them, so I'll just stick with one and then we'll keep popcorning it around because otherwise we'll have all too much to talk about. I will say one that I'm just, some of these I didn't catch during the Ignite preview, you know, the actual sessions, because there were a lot of them and some of these, I guess, didn't even, get introduced during sessions themselves. But I see there's a public preview for Azure Monitor for OpenTelemetry Exporters. So I feel like this kind of goes along, at least with the story around like logs, metrics, like OpenTelemetry, really good for tracing. And I know it's a big aspect of how Dapper operates as well, like especially when you're running microservices and you want kind of the correlation token across all of your various microservices that are running. And so I think the fact that we now have a way to kind of export OpenTelemetry for .NET, Node.js, Python into our currently existing Azure Monitor platform for application insights, I think this is great. This is definitely a good step in the right direction from a cloud native perspective. So really like that one. And then I'll throw another one in that's somewhat related to containers, but isn't getting into the weeds of the AKS stuff yet.
It's coming, right? It's coming.
App Service Environment V3. I know that we had Christina Compi on and we talked a lot about kind of innovation in this space. And I think that this was like a really long awaited service to come out with like this new, I think a lot of the enhanced support and things that you can do to lock down the environment without going, back to the V2 version and just some of the optimizations they've made. But it looks like they've also reached GA for Windows containers. And I personally think this is really good because sometimes moving Windows containers to AKS can be quite a challenge. And sometimes it doesn't always make sense, right? From a cost perspective, from like a retooling or repurposing perspective, investing the time and effort to actually make the Windows container feasible or viable to run on top of AKS can be a challenge. And so I think for customers who really want to say, hey, we see the benefit of containers from like a DevOps perspective, let's containerize maybe this more monolithic application, move it onto app service environment, still get some of that like network isolation or the single tenant PaaS experience, but get to get the benefit of that portability. I think I'm excited about this and I look forward to playing around with it. I haven't yet. So I think that's going to be an exciting one.
I can't tell you how cool OpenTelemetry is. I mean, I've been doing a lot of work with OpenTelemetry in the last few weeks. Just did a presentation on it yesterday. And Kendall, you'll be interested to know that it is the second most popular CNCF project after Kubernetes.
I believe
so
that.
So Kubernetes is one, and OpenTelemetry is number two. You know, it's often referred to as the Kubernetes of telemetry, right? Because it is so ubiquitous, it can run anywhere, it supports any language, and it does like everything that you want to do in telemetry. So, very cool feature, and I like the fact that they have, you know, I had to do what they have released today. I had to do by hand previously, and it was difficult. So, you know, by having this exporter directly available, it really makes life a lot easier to integrate OpenTelemetry with Azure Monitor.
Nice, awesome. Well, Sajid, going along that, do you have any others you want to kind of call out as we make our way back around the carousel of updates?
Absolutely, yeah. So Azure Automation is something else that, you know, we actually use it on the podcast. I don't know if you know that, to count the number of, it runs every night. It counts the number of downloads that we have and publishes it to our website. That's how you get that number. It tells you how many downloads we had last week. It kind of does some math and averages it out. But if you need to access, in order to access our Azure Storage, for example, to count that, in the past, I'd have to use something like put the credentials of it, like a run as account, to say, okay, you know, use this connection string or use this username and password and configure that. And it's always, you know, nobody really wants to configure all that because then it's exposed and, you know, possibly compromised. Now you could use manage identities to do that. So, you know, you can tell Azure Automation to use a specific Azure manage identity to get to one of these resources in a much more secure way. And then you can use Azure AD, of course, to secure that and authorize access to that. So this is, I think, a very big step for Azure Automation users.
I think too, Sajid, if I'm not wrong, there is some managed identity support now in Logic Apps as well for some of the connectors and stuff. Because I think that's a similar service where it's like, I've had conversations before where people are like, hey, you know, John was at the company, John used his own personal Outlook like account for the connector, and now John's gone and like our entire Logic Apps workflow is broken. So I think, I don't know exactly which connectors and kind of what some of the built-in operations that are now supporting managed identity, but I think that's a great step in the right direction to kind of help prevent some of those challenges. So,
go ahead, Sajid.
No, I was saying that's literally the most secure way of connecting to any resource, right? Because there's no credentials are stored anywhere. They get rotated automatically. I mean, I wouldn't do authentication any other way.
I mean, there's been a big push for that to show up almost everywhere, right? I mean, I don't know that I'm not going to, I haven't looked through every single service that we have, but I think if you look at across the board, managed identity is showing up almost everywhere these days. Because it, you know, to your point, Sajid, that is what everybody wants. Along the same line of the managed updates, managed identities. We had Serdan Bozovic on, three months ago to talk about SQL MI, and he talked about they were working on doing Windows authentication for SQL MI. Well, this now just got released as a preview. And you know, now if your app is wanting to do Windows auth, right? So traditional talking to on-premises Active Directory, you can still use that to connect to SQL MI. I have to really think about how we architected that to make that work and make those connections work. But at the end of the day, that really helps if you've got an app that has just been, it's around, it's running, and it uses Windows auth, but you need to migrate that to SQL MI. Now you don't have to change your app code. The other piece is, talking to SQL MI that I thought was really cool is that what we're calling this link feature. So if you think about an on-premises SQL server instance, you can have always-on groups that span multiple places, right? And you'll have replication going to those different places. If you lose one, it fails over in the other ones. SQL MI has some of that built in, but now you can actually link your SQL MI instance to your on-premises SQL Server environment, or even SQL Server running in a VM somewhere anyway. So link it to SQL Server. That's great for in terms of now you have some additional failover capabilities. And oh, by the way, now you can migrate, right? You sort of have this online mechanism for getting your data up. Once all the data is replicated, you break the link, repoint your app, you're up and running. Right. So again, it's just a really nice way of integrating the on-premises with the cloud capabilities at that point.
And I imagine, Evan, that, you know, especially if you have a very large database on-premises, you could kind of, you'll slowly replicate that over, you know, maybe the applications, and you can test it within the cloud and then cut the, you know, cut the link whenever you feel comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a huge one, because you think about these, you know, terabyte size databases, just copying the dang file takes an eternity, right? So yeah, having a way to do that in an online fashion to get that up is really going to open up some possibilities.
I can throw out a few more. I mean, there are so many, like I'm looking through the book of news and I'm like, oh my gosh, wait, this is so awesome.
Oh yeah, we could go for like a 6-hour show if we really wanted to.
Yeah. So okay. I want to encourage everyone, we'll make sure that we put the link to this, but it's a very comprehensive guide of all of the updates and all the different spaces. And like, even just like some of them that I'm not even going to go into because I don't even know that much about it, but I have, you know, a friend that works on some initiatives around like the Microsoft Cloud for Sustainability, which is now in preview. Like, there's just a lot of really cool stuff happening, like in the broader scale of all of these updates. But I'll kind of go back to my little niche space to just call out like some of the ones I'm the most excited about. I do think, and the last one I'll say before that is the pay-as-you-go Power Apps. You know, in preview, I think that's really good. So having a subscription model that's kind of more like the pay as you go instead of some of the upfront stuff and just some changes in licensing there that I think will be really impactful. But in the containers and Kubernetes space, we've made some like really major announcements that I wanted to just highlight. So for AKS, Azure Kubernetes Service, a lot of big updates here. A few of them that I'm really pumped about. So the Dapper extension for AKS, if y'all remember, we did an episode with one of my teammates. This is like over a year ago now. And I want to call out Dapper actually just found out like this past week that it is going straight to incubation in the CNCF. So it was accepted as an incubating project, which is a really big milestone for open source projects when they get that kind of CNCF backing. And that's going to set up a lot of structure around governance and like how it's maintained and the expectations there. And so I'm really excited about that, but we're releasing a Dapper extension for AKS. So instead of, you know, going and grabbing the Helm chart and doing the installation on your cluster, you can actually just kind of enable that on Create and you'll have the managed control plane for Dapper. So very similar to how we have like Azure Active Directory pod identity and other add-ons to that extent. And so really pumped about this. And remember, if you're not familiar, Dapper is really, it's called the Distributed Application Runtime, and its goal is to help making microservices development more streamlined. So it brings some of the like PubSub abstraction and abstraction for secrets management so that you get a lot of portability from your containers to connect to cloud services wherever they're running. And you can run it on the edge. You can run it without Kubernetes. So they had just had a conference. I'll send a link in the show notes on like the Dapper conference, just if you're interested in listening to some of those sessions. But some other really great features went into like preview or GA. So the GA of the Open Service Mesh add-on. So this is another add-on for basically a managed service mesh that Microsoft implemented. So that's really great if you're looking at service mesh or need some of the like capabilities like MTLS and you weren't using Dapper, a service mesh can provide that, you know, traffic shifting, traffic splitting, that kind of stuff. We also went GA with the Secret Store CSI driver. So this is really neat because it basically makes it where you can, yeah, take like something like an Azure Key Vault and basically mount it into your container in order to be able to securely access your Kubernetes secrets. So you can either like sync it up via environment variables, whatever, but definitely makes the connectivity to access your secrets within your Kubernetes cluster, you know, a bit more streamlined. And then, you know, on the containerization front, the last one that I'll touch on is not necessarily related to Azure Kubernetes Service, but just containers on Azure. So we have a variety of services already outside of Kubernetes that you can use on Azure to run containers. So if you've thought about things like Azure Container Instances, they're basically services that help provide an alternative to running on, you know, Azure Kubernetes Service. And Azure Kubernetes Service has a lot of operational overhead when it comes to actually learning how to run the service, how to take it to production. You know, there's a lot of considerations there, and it takes a lot of time to upskill and make sure that your developers can actually be efficient and effective, because there's a lot of security and operations hurdles you have to jump through before you can really make that platform consumable. And so Azure Container Instances was released in public preview, which I am like super, super excited about. I've actually been testing the private preview, and so I was just like really anticipating this being released, and I think we've gotten a lot of excitement around it. But essentially what it provides is the ability for your developers to focus specifically on building out microservice-based applications. That's what it's really a good target for. You can run other services in it, background jobs, things like that, but microservices, it's really what it's targeted at. And you don't have to worry about managing the Kubernetes cluster. So you get all of the scalability kind of in a serverless fashion. So if you're familiar with projects like Kada, so the Kubernetes event-driven application or autoscaler, we bring that to the table managed. We bring Dapper managed. So a lot of these really great innovations in the open source ecosystem are brought to the platform so that you can basically get that scale to zero capability and then scale out similarly to how you would do with Azure Functions. And you can use Kada to do that on a variety of different metrics, right? Whether it's number of messages in a queue or whatever that might be. Did I say Azure Container Services? Yeah, it's Azure Container Apps. My bad. I was mixing up Azure Kubernetes Service and Container Apps. Yes, it's called Container Apps. Thanks, Sajid, for calling that out. But it does it's similar to how Kubernetes operates, but you don't have to worry about all of the management and the maintenance of the Kubernetes cluster that we're managing on your behalf. And so lots of really cool stuff here that you should take a look at for sure, especially the managed Dapper aspect. So I'll make sure that I drop a link into this, but we are going to have a show specifically on Container Apps. So I won't go too much deeper from there just to keep some of the goodness abstracted away from all of you for now. But definitely dive in, and Sajid, feel free to add any comments you have here, but I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, the Dapper one's pretty good because it was possible obviously to do Dapper before with AKS, but you had to roll your own kind of thing, where it was a bit of a pain in the neck. This just makes it a lot easier right now. It's available as a ready-made extension, so definitely looking forward to that. I'll take two that are kind of in AKS land, but very near and dear to me because I cut my teeth trying to do this last year for a customer, which is deploying WebSphere in AKS. So a lot of customers use WebSphere and WebLogix, which are popular Java enterprise application servers, right? They used to be called G2EE back in the day, but they don't call that anymore. They just call it Enterprise Edition servers. And these are the commercial version of Java, which can do a lot of things like clustering and running things like microservices in for Java and things like that. So now they have a ready-made marketplace items for both WebSphere Liberty and Open Liberty, as well as WebLogic. So you could, if you use any of those today and you're thinking, hey, how can I migrate this to the cloud? Putting in an AKS, it becomes easier now, right? Because you can just take this, you don't have to deploy any software or manage anything. You have the marketplace item, you just drop it, it goes into your AKS cluster, and away we go. So, this is definitely going to make a life a lot easier. As I said, it took me weeks to configure this last year, and I'm happy that now it's going to be a smoother experience for our customers.
Isn't Sajid something? When I hear about that, I think about the hours of my life that I have spent either trying to configure something like WebLogic or even SQL Server Always On, SharePoint, like all those things, and these days you just go click and it deploys it and it's best practices and it's the right config. And yeah, you still got to tune it a little bit for your exact workload, but all that upfront time, either not even doing the first install, it's troubleshooting it after it doesn't work. All that time is saved with all these marketplace images and the cloud just makes it so much easier. I'm super jealous of people that have never had to live through that pain. Speaking of SQL Server, we had Bob Ward on maybe a year ago or so, maybe 2 years now, because I think this was pre-COVID. He talked about SQL Server running on Linux. Well, we just announced that SQL Server will now run on Ubuntu Pro, right? Which is this build of enterprise grade, Ubuntu that's released. We did it in partnership with Canonical, and it really optimizes some of the IO stack. It you know, optimizes the way SQL Server runs in this environment. But it's really just a nice way for people that are living in a Linux world, but still do want to run SQL Server to run on, you know, an enterprise grade OS.
Yeah, I wanted to call out a couple more too, just because if any of my customers actually do listen to this, there's a few things that I get asked a lot about. And so,
wait a minute. So what you're doing, Kendall, is you're really trying to get more listeners for us, right? Oh, yo, don't talk to me. Just go listen to my show.
Yeah. So a couple of updates on the Azure API management front. So one of them is the GraphQL support. So this is like something that we get a lot of questions around or that customers come to us. But basically, we're going to have the support for GraphQL pass-through, and it's in preview. So if you actually go in and spin up like a new instance of Azure API management, you usually have like the HTTP option right there when you log in, and now you'll have one for WebSockets as well. So like there's now native support for WebSockets APIs and Azure API management. And so I think these are two big ones that just like a lot of customers have asked about. They want to kick the tires on, they want to test out. So definitely take a look there. And then there's also Azure API management integration with Azure Event Grid. And so I think this was already in public preview and is now GA. But basically what it can do is like you can build an app that updates a database or creates a billing account, sends an email notification when a new user is added to API management. So like there's some cool things you can do basically based on, hey, an event has taken place within API management, like what subsequent processing, you know, downstream decisions do we need to make now that that user has, you know, joined or whatever that event might be. So I think that's really cool. And we've also seen some Event Grid integration with other services. Like I know Azure Kubernetes Service has that in preview. So like, hey, there's a new version of Kubernetes available. Like, let's take a downstream action. So I just love the whole like eventing movement, you know, between container apps like AKS, API management, just the event driven architecture pattern being built into the Azure platform gets me really jazzed. Pumped about that. So I wanted to call those couple things out here while we have time.
And yeah, I know we should be wrapping up soon, but Kendall, did you talk about the AKS start stop feature? I don't remember if you called that out in your update. Otherwise, I'll mention it.
The start stop one, that's in GA, right? Because I think it was in public. Was it in public preview or did I just know about it already?
It's public preview now.
Okay. Yep. So from my understanding, Sajid, what do you want to take it? I can tell you what my understanding is without looking.
Go ahead. Yeah. I was going to talk about it, but I want to make sure we cover it before we leave.
I've talked a lot. I'll let you take this one.
This is a feature that I know when I was working with customers was a pain in the neck because, you know, they have all these node pools out there in AKS. And sometimes, you know, they don't want the node pool running overnight. So they have to bring it down to zero nodes manually and then again bring it up back the next day to whatever, five nodes. But then that takes a whole lot of time and all the containers have to restart and whatnot. Now what you can just stop the entire node pool, you know, basically, and then continue where you left off tomorrow. So essentially, you know, all of the underlying VMs are stopped, and then next day they start it up for you in one action. And this way, the amount of operational overhead is minimal. And so I think that's my understanding. Kendall, please feel free to chime in.
Yeah, I think it's really good because it's just kind of like this warm instance. So like if you have like the data aspect, like you've already mounted a volume, if you already have the images pulled, it's going to save you a lot of time because you don't have to go through that tedious process of like getting the node into a ready state for the workload to actually run. So yeah, I think that's going to be a big benefit, especially if you're running like heavy workloads that have really large base images or Docker files or what Docker images. I think that'll be good, that having that kind of ready to go when you need it. So. Yeah, that was my understanding.
Sounds good. I think there's probably many more items we can talk about, but I think we've done a good job covering our favorites, right?
Absolutely.
The only thing I would say to look at, because I'm going to do it today, is like the changes in Azure Defender space. Like we've done some renaming, like there's some shifts in the security, I would say like the security management side of the house. So I'm definitely going to be reading up on like Azure. I think it's now, what is it, Microsoft Defender? So Microsoft Defender, and we have like a couple of flavors of it. So I saw a lot of tweets about that. So that's what I'm going to spend some time looking into today, the changes there.
Yeah, I think it just got deployed to my phone this morning, the Microsoft Defender. So yeah. I had to struggle with that for a little bit. All right. Well, this has been great. Thank you for all the updates and sharing all your expertise in the respective areas. I think this is a good roundup.
Yeah, it gives us lots and lots and lots of guests or that we have to go chase now, right, to talk about deeper about all this kind of stuff. So.
And we'll look forward to our episode next week, where we're going to talk about one of these updates, which happened this week. But we didn't want to spoil the surprise. So it's a big one, though. It's a big one related to Azure. That's all we can tell our listeners. And we're going to have the product team on next week to talk about.
Sounds great. Catch y'all later.
Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.